It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. You know, every week we come in with Crowder, David Crowder, in chains, and I'm slowly turning into him. My beard is slowly reaching Crowder level. For many of you, you've never seen me. You don't know what I look like. Picture Crowder's beard, except it's red. that's what it is. And so that probably is not a good picture to put in your head, but hey, that's what we have. And so I'm a grown man and I can grow a beard. And so I'm going to do that because the Lord wills it. And that's what I tell my wife when she tells me to shave it. So thanks so much for listening. If you have, if you want to keep up with everything Hope Resource Center, you can at investinghope.com. You can read the blog there. You can also listen to archives of this show. You can listen to the podcast. Also, you can find the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn app, wherever podcasts are found. So this week we're going to talk about a couple things. One thing that we're going to start with is while the abortion debate goes on across the country, and we see legislatures pass bills that promote life, we see legislatures pass bills that promote abortion. One thing that I've been saying and others have been saying is, where are the pro-life OBGYNs? We're hearing from pro-choice OBGYNs. We're hearing from organizations. We're hearing from Planned Parenthood. Where are the pro-life OBs speaking out on this? And so I want to bring you an article from the Daily Signal that came out from a pro-life OBGYN. And I think her points are valid and need to be heard. And frankly, we need more articles like this from the many pro-life OBs that are out there. And so we'll get to that in a second. We're also going to talk about, last week or the week before, we talked about Alabama and the recent law where they passed to ban all abortions. Well, there has been some more interesting news out of Alabama concerning the University of Alabama. And I get it, if you're listening to this and you're local and you're saying, why do I care about the University of Alabama? I promise you, bear with me. This is going to be a time where I think if you're listening to this show, you're going to actually applaud the University of Alabama for doing what they did. We'll talk about that here in a second. We'll also talk about baby showers coming up at Hope this week and what that means for patients, and also some other news that is out there we'll get to, as well as a bunch of CEOs have now signed on a list calling for legislatures to stop restricting abortions. And I'll give you my opinions on CEOs of big companies getting involved in that discussion. But let's start with this article from the Daily Signal. Ingrid Skop is the one that wrote it, and she is an OB. And so I find the article very, very important, and we need to see more of these. So I'll just start from there. Pregnancy kills, abortions saves lives. So proclaimed a recent New York Times commentary by Dr. Warren Hearn. The fact is, abortion ends life. Again, this is an article from Ingrid Skop. A fetus is a living human being. The human heart starts beating in early pregnancy, hence the recent rise of quote-unquote fetal heartbeat laws designed to protect life. In Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court ruled that fetal life lacks the ill-defined trait of quote-unquote personhood, but it never denied that such life is a living human being. This is Ingrid talking, I've worked as an OB for 28 years, and I am grateful for the responsibility to care for two patients, the preborn baby and his or her mother. I love and value both of their lives, and I have no doubt that each unborn human has the potential to make significant contributions to the world. I am not alone. Studies indicate that listen to this stat. This is very important that you hear this. Studies indicate that 9 out of 10 OBGYNs will not perform an abortion when requested by their patients. Listen to that. Studies indicate that 9 out of 10 OBGYNs will not perform an abortion when requested by their patients. Now, you're not hearing that number on the cable news outlets. You're not seeing that written about in the New York Times or the Washington Post. That statistic alone should dispel the false assertion that abortion is a necessary part of women's health care. In his column, Hearn repeated a common claim that, quote, abortion is safer than childbirth, end quote. Yet he must be aware that the studies supposedly documenting a low risk of death from induced abortion are based on very poor data. For starters, they rely on voluntary reporting, a notoriously weak methodology. Moreover, they are woefully deficient in death certificate documentation. High-quality records linkage studies from Europe show that 94% of abortion-related deaths are not identified on death certificates. Thus, the abortion-related deaths documented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention represent only the tip of the iceberg. Using what little data it could collect, the agency concluded that the risk of maternal mortality rose dramatically throughout the period of pregnancy. The risk following an early second trimester abortion was 15 times higher than if the abortion had been performed at 8 weeks, 30 times higher in the mid-second trimester, and 76 times higher after viability. Abortion advocates often claim that later abortions occur infrequently. In fact, around 100,000 are performed every year after the first trimester. This includes 13,000 abortions occurring after viability when the fetus has the potential to survive separated from his or her mother. As for saving the mother's life, almost none of these later abortions are performed due to health problems. Rather, they occur as a result of external developments affecting the mother's mental and emotional state, things such as indecision, partner abandonment, or coercion. There are more reasons to be skeptical of reports assuring the American public that abortion is safer than childbirth. The large-scale studies that presumably document the safety of the procedure have been conducted by pro-choice advocates and other ideology-similar organizations. There's a great deal of money being made in the abortion industry. Abortions cost, listen to this number, abortions cost between $500 and $10,000 each. Revenues and profits rise as abortion access increases. Consequently, studies produced by the industry should be evaluated carefully and confirmed by independent researchers. Lawmakers were not content to blindly believe the tobacco industry when it assured the nation that smoking was safe and did not cause cancer. Likewise, they should be skeptical of reports and assurances from the abortion industry because the data begs for more investigation. A frequent argument made for allowing late abortions is that they may be necessary to save a woman's life. It is true that we are seeing more high-risk mothers due to advancing maternal age and chronic illnesses such as obesity, hypertension, and diabetes. But it is also true that we now have an entire subspecialty maternal fetal medicine devoted to helping a mother and a child make it safely through a pregnancy. In the rare event that a pregnancy poses a risk to a woman's life after viability, her OB can deliver her by induction or C-section without sacrificing the baby. Abortion advocates would have you believe that childbirth is extremely dangerous, yet the U.S. maternal mortality rate is only 18 per 100,000 live births. Yes, I wish it were zero. The death of even one mother is an unspeakable tragedy, but the risk of dying in childbirth is only slightly higher than the risk of dying in a car accident. Despite these odds, we do not avoid riding in a car to conduct our daily activities. Why should we argue that women end their lives of their unborn children in order to protect their own? Okay, so we have a pro-life OBGYN speaking out and saying, look, the studies show that 9 out of 10, and that number is staggering, 9 out of 10 doctors, when asked if they will perform an abortion on their patient, will say no. Think about that. And just like the doctor said in this piece, that number alone should dispel that abortion is a must in women's health. You know, I heard someone today that she's running for president, Senator Gillibrand, and she spoke out and said she compared pro-lifers and pro-life judges to judges that might be racist or anti-Semitic. So what we have is we have people right now comparing pro-life people to those that were back in the day calling for slavery, to those back in the day that were standing with the Nazis, just because we're saying that life deserves protection. And they go as far as making the point and saying that every life, this was Senator Gillibrand's actual words. She said, every life has value and deserves protection. But for some reason, that doesn't include the life in the womb. And so as they continue to fight and continue to argue and continue to push that we need abortion on demand for any reason, they fail to recognize that the vast majority of the population in every single poll believes that third trimesters should be outlawed. The vast majority of the population in every poll believes that after 20 weeks, abortion should be restricted. Science has showed us that viability now is not just at 30 weeks. We saw just the other day, and I talked about last week, that we had a baby in California survive at 22 weeks. And so what we have currently is we have leaders in Washington that are running to the extreme when it comes to abortion. The one candidate on the other side, the one candidate running in the Democratic primary that I thought might be the one to say, look, I'm for abortion, but it has to stop after 20 weeks, and certainly taxpayers shouldn't be paying for it. The one candidate in Joe Biden just flipped over the weekend. And so the legislation that's put in place that has said taxpayers will not pay for the abortion, Joe Biden has been in support of that for years. His entire political career, he has been in support of that piece of legislation. He has argued that he is personally pro-life because of his religious upbringing, but he does not believe that legislation should restrict abortion. Now, I disagree with that, but it's interesting to me that after all that time, he's then asked about it over the weekend. His team comes out and says he still currently supports that, and then not even 24 hours later, he comes out and flips and says, no, you know what? We need abortion on demand, and actually, I believe that our tax dollars should pay for it. So now you have 24, 25 candidates running on the Democratic ticket, and not one of them believes that there should be any restriction on abortion. Does that represent the populace? Well, of course it doesn't. But at least we know where they stand. And the unfortunate thing about someone like Vice President Joe Biden is it just shows that the motivations are simply about what they believe is going to help them to win. And again, like I talked about last week, we live in a time where everyone is trying to outwoke the other person. And so Joe Biden wants to show, look, I'm in my early 70s. I'm almost 75 years old, but I'm just as woke as Pete from Indiana. And so in doing that, in trying to outwoke each other, they have actually ran counter to what the bulk of the populace want or believe. And now what you have is you have a group of folks that are pro-life, whether they're Democrat or Republican, who are going, where does my vote go? I know plenty Democrat pro-lifers who really do not know what to do at this point and where their vote should go. They are a people without a party. We'll talk more when we come back. I am a mountain mover, water walker, more than just an overcomer, 'cause I've been set free. I am a gospel preacher, heart on fire, freedom singer, testifier, 'cause I've been redeemed. I am a believer. So I quickly touched on it in the last segment, but I did want to kind of give you an idea of where Joe Biden stood on the Hyde Amendment. That's what I was talking about in terms of taxpayers paying for abortion. And so there's a tweet thread that I want to share with you, because it shows this wasn't just Joe Biden hasn't flipped on this over the years. I mean, this has been a steady and consistent stance for a long time. And then he gets called out on it last week and he immediately buckles to the pressure. And so in 1976, Biden voted for the Hyde Amendment, a law banning federal funds to pay for abortion. In 1981, the quote-unquote Biden Amendment to the Foreign Assistance Act banned any American aid from being used in research related to abortions. In 1984, Biden supported the Mexico City policy, which bans federal funding for private organizations that provide abortion, advocate to decriminalize abortion, or expand abortion services. In 1993, Biden votes to save the Hyde Amendment. In 95 and 97, Biden voted for partial birth abortion bans that would be vetoed by Bill Clinton. June 5th, 2019, Joe Biden continues his 40-plus year support for the Hyde Amendment. June 6th on Twitter, Twitter pushback to Biden's support of the Hyde Amendment. June 6th at the night, Joe Biden caves and drops a 40-plus year position to appease the folks that called him out, and now supports taxpayer-funded abortion from conception to birth. And so that's where we have to be. We have to understand what's going on here. Consistently, he has said, and he probably would tell you to your face today if you ran into him while he's on the campaign trail. He would probably, and you asked him, Vice President Biden, do you consider yourself pro-life? He would probably look at you and say, personally, I am pro-life. But who am I as a man, especially in 2019 as a white man, to dare say anyone should not be able to have an abortion? But personally, I am pro-life. Folks, that's a cop-out. That's weak. And that's not leadership at all. That is Pontius Pilate washing his hands of what's about to happen to Jesus. That is saying, you know, personally, I'm against the killing of another citizen, but you do you. No. No, that's not how this works. And so I did want to give you some context to where they were, where Joe Biden is when it comes to the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment is very important because I don't want my tax dollars paying for abortion. And I'm sure you don't want your tax dollars to pay for it either. But now we have the vice president, former vice president, coming out and saying that he is okay with that. So now you have a complete, every single one running in the Democratic primary is for abortion on demand for any reason throughout the entire pregnancy. So what that means is every single person currently running in the Democratic primary is completely in favor of what Illinois just passed in their state and allowing abortion all the way through birth. It's completely in favor of what New York did. There's no middle ground. You know, they always say, well, Alabama didn't compromise. Alabama didn't put in exceptions for rape and incest and life of the mother in their abortion ban. But yet they are unwilling to compromise. Actually, they're calling us bigots. And they're calling us, saying that we hate women and we want to put them back. And so that is where we are. I do want to quickly talk about Alabama for a second. So, as you know, Alabama passed, just a few weeks ago, they passed a bill banning abortions completely. As soon as the heartbeat is detected, abortion is banned in the state of Alabama. Now, that's going to be clearly that's going to be fought in the courts. But hats off to Alabama making the bold move and putting all their chips in on the table and saying, look, this is what we're going to do. This is where we stand. The governor is a female. She signed it. The sponsor of the legislation, female, and brought that forward. And so glad to see that happen. Well, in the meantime, there was a guy that one of the largest donors, maybe the largest donor of the University to the University of Alabama, Hugh Culverhouse, donated a large sum of money, $21.5 million, to the University of Alabama Law School. And he did that to get his name on the building. He wanted the law school named after him. Also, they've released emails. He wanted emails to be released to show that Alabama, University of Alabama, were making decisions based on politics. But really, when the emails were released, it really just made him look like a really bad guy. And I don't think it went the direction he wanted it to go. But he's a large donor to the University of Alabama. He's made donations to other colleges. And this time he said, you know what? I'm going to help the law school. I'm going to put my name on the building. I'm going to send $21.5 million to the University of Alabama, and all is going to be great. Well, then Alabama passes the abortion law. And what happens? Well, this Culver House donor does not like the abortion law. So he comes out and he says, you need to boycott the state of Alabama. And a matter of fact, you don't just need to boycott the state of Alabama. You need to boycott the University of Alabama. And so how did the University of Alabama respond? Well, here's how they responded. They reached out to Culver House and said, hey, your money's in the mail with interest. We're sending it back to you, and your name is coming off the law school. Now that is, as a Tennessee fan, this news out of Alabama made me happy. It almost made me say Roll Tide. Almost. So they sent him his money back and said, look, we don't want any part of it. Now he's saying they did that because of politics. They're saying they did that because he is telling people to boycott the law school. He's telling people to boycott the University of Alabama. Well, the University of Alabama is kind of concerned about who comes and their numbers. And so they need people coming to the university. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to take a donation from someone who's then going to do everything they can to keep people from coming to your university. And so Alabama takes the bold step and says, look, we don't need your money. You can have your money back. And your name's not going to be on the law school. And looking through these emails, he was also arguing to have a role in hiring professors, firing professors. He wanted to have the ability to walk into classrooms at any point during the day without getting permission from the professor, and just so he could watch and observe. And so I think University of Alabama probably saw this as a headache they didn't need. But that's a bold move by a public university to say, I'm telling you, working in a nonprofit, somebody hands you a check for $21.5 million. It's hard to say no to that. It's certainly hard to say, you know what, we're going to send that back to you, and we're going to send it back to you with interest. But that's what the University of Alabama did. And, you know, obviously some people are upset, but I think the majority of folks are giving Alabama a standing ovation in this case and saying thank you for being bold and coming out against a donor that is trying to tie your hands and make you do something you don't want to do. So hat tip to University of Alabama and the state of Alabama still making news when it comes to abortion bans and standing for life. Look, folks, if we're going to do this as states, if we're going to do this as Christians, if we're going to do this as a pro-life movement, there are going to be some tough situations. There are going to be some tough stances that we have to make. But we need our leaders that have been put in those places to be willing and bold enough to take those stances. And I'm glad that Alabama is doing just that. We'll talk more when we come back. Saying no to my downcast soul. Saying no to the lies I tell myself. Saying no to my downcast soul. So as we continue the conversation, now I want to shift gears a little bit and look at a recent letter that was put out by 180 CEOs as they opposing state restrictions on abortions. So the leaders say their employees and customers' economic stability depend on it. So here we have CEOs of large corporations that have hundreds, maybe thousands of employees. Let's say many of those employees are female. It's kind of convenient that large corporations would want to see more abortions, because what does that mean? Well, that means there's less maternity leave. There's less family leave. There's less, I got to go pick my kids up at school leave. There's less, my kid's got a game tonight. I can't work overtime for you. You know, there's less, my kid's got a birthday, or it's the Christmas party we can't say Christmas. It's the holiday party at school, and I need to be there for that. You see, but that's not what the article's talking about. Washington Post is celebrating these 180 CEOs. But the reality is these 180 CEOs are signing this and making decisions based on their bottom line. And so abortion is good for business. Look, I'm one of the conservatives that's for maternity leave and family leave and making sure that family is celebrated and that we're working to make sure that families are sustainable and working together. One of the larger issues we have in society today is the breakdown of the family. And so I'm all for leading in such a way that family is elevated and celebrated, and that moms can love on their children and that dads can love on their children and that they can have time off to take care of their kids and not have to worry about ramifications at work and consequences at work. But think about the woman, the man that is working for one of these CEOs. Think about a woman currently working for one of these CEOs, and that woman is pregnant. And then she reads that her boss is in favor of abortion, and women need that, and that economic stability depends on it. Well, whose economic stability depends on it? They say it's the customer and their employees, but maybe it's the CEO's economic stability that depends on abortion. Well, what if all our female employees got pregnant at the same time? What if everybody's kid was sick at the same time? We can't have that. We need more abortion. That's what these CEOs, it appears to me, are saying. Now, they think, again, it goes back to everyone tries to outwoke the other person. So they would say, look, I'm just woke. I'm just relevant and part of the movement in 2019. But it seems to me to be rather convenient for these CEOs to stand for abortion on demand. And then what kind of work environment is that providing for your employees? How's that make that pregnant mom feel? How's that make the man that works there that has a pregnant wife at home, how's that make him feel? I'm really curious to know what the parental paid leave policies are for these CEOs and their companies. You know, in years past, progressives would call this out and say, look, you're just looking at your bottom line and you just want to see more abortion because it's going to keep the workforce in place. And they won't have to use sick time. They won't have to use maternity leave. They won't have to use paid time off. But in 2019, CEOs do this and they're celebrated. And they're champions for women's rights. And that's where we find ourselves. I mean, we have a group of folks that have an agenda. Look, I have an agenda, and I get it. Everybody has an agenda. And when people say, well, your agenda is to see abortion ended across the board. Yes, that 100%, that is my agenda. I don't hide that. That's who I am. That's what I want to see happen. For those that are like, I just, you know, the pro-lifers have just secretly been trying to end abortion since 1973. Yeah, we haven't been doing that secretly at all. Listen back to the archive of this show. Like, I promise, every week I talk about ending abortion. I'm not doing that secretly. But now we do have, at the very least, in 2019, we have the pro-choice side coming out and putting all their cards on the table. It's no longer safe, legal, and rare. It's no longer we want to keep women from the back alleys with coat hangers from having abortions. It's now for any reason, at any time, during the pregnancy. And not only that, but we're going to celebrate it. We're going to create a hashtag called Shout Your Abortion. We're going to have interviews and feature women that have had abortions, and we're going to ask them, which one was your favorite abortion? That's an actual interview you can find online. Then you have people say, look, no one is pro-abortion. When NPR puts out their requirements for writing stories, they say, don't call the pro-life movement pro-life. Call them anti-abortion. And pro-choicers can be pro-choice, or they can be women's rights. Don't call them pro-abortion. But it seems to me when Planned Parenthood and other organizations come out and all they talk about is abortion, they say out of one side of their mouth, it's 3% of what we do. And then when any legislation is passed to restrict it, they spend all of their time, all of their efforts, all of their money to see abortion be more relevant in society. They send their money to candidates that are going to push abortion. And so it seems to me that abortion is pretty important to them. Seems to me that that you could call them pro-abortion. Look, I'm not going to argue. If somebody calls me anti-abortion, yeah, you got me. I am pro-life, certainly. I'd rather be known for what I'm for, and I'm for life. But if you want to label it, sure, I'm anti-abortion. But the thing to me that I don't understand is how when people are pro-choice, when presidential candidates come out and say, not only should abortion be able to be legal across the board, it also should be able to happen at any time during the pregnancy. Oh, and it also should be paid by insurance companies. Oh, and also religious organizations should also pay for contraception and for abortion. And also on top of all of that, taxpayers should be paying for abortion. When you put all of that together in context, it's hard for me to say no one is pro-abortion. It sure seems like there are 25 candidates currently on the Democratic ticket that are pro-abortion. I mean, prove me wrong. I would love for any of them to say, look, in this case, it's not okay. None of them are answering the question of when race is involved. Race plays a role in abortion. Not only are they not answering that question, no one's asking them that question. And so that's where we are when we have 180 CEOs come out and say, yeah, we need more abortion, not less. They say that, and then not one media outlet comes out and questions and says, hold on, is your motivation for more abortion about your bottom line? Is it about keeping people at work? What are your paid leave policies? Is anyone asking them that? Or are they just going, oh, this is so awesome that these CEOs are just so, so great and so progressive. And if we just had more CEOs like them and less babies, this world would be a better place. Is that where we are today? I mean, we need leaders at a political level, at a religious level, at a business level that are going to celebrate family. We have communities across this country of all nationalities that struggle because of the breakdown of the family. And no wonder the family has been decimated when we have been calling for the annihilation of a segment of the population since 1973. And now we've entered into an era where it's not even safe, legal, and rare, but it's, hey, we want it all the time for any reason at any point during the pregnancy. And not only that, we're going to give it a standing ovation. We're going to give it a standing ovation, and we're going to celebrate it. And we're going to shout it from the rooftops. And then we're gonna write articles and say that heartbeats aren't really heartbeats, that they're actually just electric pulses that eventually turn into heartbeats. And then they call me the crazy extreme one and the anti-science person. This is why we take the stances we take as the pro-life movement. This is why I go to Washington every year for the March for Life. Because we're truly in the upside down. Crazy times. But we're going to keep doing it. Till the Lord calls us home, we're going to keep fighting for life, celebrating family. We'll talk more when we come back. He put that hunger in your heart. There's that awkward pause as the music fades out. That I like to do that. So hopefully today's been helpful as we talked about some news around the globe with some OBs finally speaking out on pro-life issues and University of Alabama taking a bold stance. Former Vice President Joe Biden backpedaling and going against 46 years of consistency. And now coming out against the Hyde Amendment, and then 180 CEOs coming out in favor of abortion, and no one calling them out on it is just par for the course in 2019. But we also, there are some good things happening. I feel like there are times we focus on some of the negative news, but this week at Hope we are going to have 11 baby showers on Thursday. 11 baby showers happening at Hope Resource Center on Thursday afternoon. And so we are not just Thursday afternoon, really it's going to take the entire day. So we love doing this. After every parenting class, we throw baby showers. And so we're going to spend the day showering these moms with gifts, with food, with gorgeous decorations. And it's just an awesome time to come together and celebrate these moms and the choice that they made. And so we'll be doing that. If you want to help out with that, you can go to investinghope.com and click on the donate button and just send us some funds. And so we can purchase the items that we need. Pack and play, diaper bag, car seat, booster seat, all kinds of things. Diapers and wipes and clothes, baby lotion and soap and shampoo and bathtub. All of that brand new items going to each one of these moms. And so we'll have 11 car seats, 11 pack and plays on Thursday. It's going to be an amazing thing. So if you want to help out with that, investinghope.com. You can also go to our store on Amazon. You can find that link at investinghope.com. But you can go to Amazon and you can just ship those items to us. And so let's say you've been blessed this week and you say, you know what, I'm going to buy a car seat and have it shipped to Hope. You can do that. And we would certainly welcome that. And we're expecting some items to arrive this week before shower. My mom actually has taken care of some onesies, and she's going to send us some onesies that say Image Bearer. If you've seen our shirts, we have shirts that say Image Bearer. Well, all these onesies are going to say Image Bearer on them. And so excited to get them in the hands of these moms and to see their little babies in these onesies. That call them what they are, image bearers. They each of them bear the image of our Creator, and we are excited to be to play just a little part in that. And so if you want to learn more about that type of stuff and how you can volunteer, again, investinghope.com, and you can just send a form in. You can go to the volunteer tab and say, hey, I'm interested in volunteering. Maybe you're a nurse and you want to be a volunteer nurse. Maybe you don't have as much time and you say, look, every once in a while, I want to come in and I want to help decorate for baby shower. Or maybe you're an amazing, you're amazing at wrapping gifts. You can come in and help us wrap gifts for the baby shower. Maybe you're a great cook. You can provide food for baby shower and for classes. Maybe you just have a whole lot of money and you like to give it away. You can do that as well. InvestingHope.com. So we would strongly encourage that. Also, maybe you're listening your story is one that needs to be told, and you want to reach out and you want to be able to share that story. with folks that are going through similar circumstances and situations. You can volunteer and be a mentor at Hope and mentor some of these young moms, and we would certainly welcome that. There's a training involved with that. There's no training for all the other stuff, but there is a training for mentoring, and that's such a great opportunity to make an impact in some of these folks' life. And man, there's so many stories that have happened here in recent days that I want to share with you, and I will hopefully in the near future. Just the impact that people have had simply because they said yes and they invested in the life of another, and it just has. It has floored me, and there's one story in particular that I really want to share, and I can't right now, but again, hopefully I can in the future, that truly took a patient's life that was turned completely upside down, and because they invested, because they loved, because they cared, it has changed everything. It has changed the trajectory of this little family. And man, those are the stories that we want to tell, and you can be a part of that, and you can learn more about that at investinghope.com, and we would love for you to reach out and help us as we serve this city. Okay, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.